So good morning. So let's begin. Today's daf is Lamed Aleph. So we left off on Lamed Amud Beis. The Gemara says the following, last two lines. Amalei Abaye and the Rav Yosef. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, the following, Rabbi, who did the Amar Srach Tevi Lohi, Zo, top of Lamed Aleph, Chotzitz, or Eino Chotzitz. So also remember, yesterday the fundamental machlokas, the Mishnah said that whenever you come to the Azora, whenever you come to the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, so the Maisa said you have to go ahead and go to the Mikvah. So yesterday we spent our entire shiur focusing on what is the nature of that particular tevila. So remember again, we had a machlokes ben Zoma and Rabbi Yehuda. Ben Zoma said it's Doraisa. Rabbi Yehuda said it's Dirabanan. So now the Gemara asks, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's a Dirabanan, what he called Srach tevila. So do you have to be worried about a chatzitza? A chatzitza means an interposition, something on the skin that would prevent the water from touching all parts of the flesh. So the shayla is, now that we're saying that this tevila is dirabanan, would Rabbi Yehuda be makbir on a chatzitza or not? So the Gemara says, Amrle, so they responded to him, called the takun rabbanon kein daraisa takun. The answer is yes. Why? Because any time that the rabbis legislated, the rabbis legislated their laws to be similar to the construct of biblical laws. So therefore, again, even though it's a rabbinic tevila looks no different than biblical tevila. And just like biblical tevila can't have a chatzitza, so too rabbinic tevila cannot either. So the Gemara goes weiter. Amalei Abaye Rav Yosef. So Abaye says Rav Yosef, Bia b'miktsas shma bia olo. What about Bia b'miktsas? What does Bia b'miktsas mean? Bia b'miktsas means a partial entry. Let's say a person doesn't enter into the Azara with their entire body, but just with part of their body. So does that count as entering or not? So let's say again, I'm just going to extend part of my body into the Azara. Does a person have an obligation to go to the mikvah before doing that or not? So Gemara says, well, that's an easy one. Amrlei bahonos yochihu shehein Bia b'miktsas. These Rabbos, remember, we actually had this yesterday. Bahonos Rabbos refers to what? Refers to the thumbs and the big toes. So the Gemara says, we already saw yesterday that what happens? V'tanya mitzora tovel va'omid b'shar nikan. Remember again, Rabbos, one of the cases we spent the entire Amud Beis focusing on yesterday was what? Was the mitzora who comes to shar nikan or on day 8 of his purification process for sprinkling up the blood, actually the application of the blood. And if you remember again, the Braisa said that he has to go to the mikvah prior to inserting his thumbs and his toes into the Azara. So from here we see that Lamaisa, even a partial entry, is called an entry. So the Gemara goes weiter. Ibailhu, Maushiyasa Sakin, is an interesting case. Maushiyasa Sakin Aruka, the Yishchot. Can you go ahead and make a long knife and shecht? And I will say, now what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Maushi asa sakin aruka. Liftar atzma min atvila. So what happens? I will say, I don't want to have to go to the mikvah. I want to shecht. Remember, shechita is kshera bizar. Truth is, this is true either with the kohen or with the non-kohen, because anyone could shecht. But let's say again, I want to shecht my karbon, but I don't want to enter into the azara. So instead, what do I want to do? I mean, I don't want to have to go to the mikvah. So what do I want to do? I want to make a very long knife. So I'm going to stand outside of the Azara. But again, like I said, don't ask how or the why. My knife will extend into the Azara. Also, by the way, just all kidding aside, the knife actually doesn't have to be all that long. Because Lamaisa, again, remember, you could actually stand just over the line of the Kodesh. So I want to make a long knife. I'm going to stand in the non-consecrated part of the Beis HaMikdash, which doesn't require tefillah. I'm going to shecht my animal in the consecrated part of the Beis HaMikdash. Look at Rashi. Maushi asks Sakin Aruka, Liftar Atzma min HaTefillah. The whole idea over here is I don't want to have to go to the mikvah. The Ya'amod Chutz La'azara. Therefore, I'm going to stand outside of the courtyard. The Yoshit Yado Lifnim. The Yishchot, I'm going to extend my, when he says extend my hand, he doesn't literally mean hand. What he means over here is my knife, inside, and I'll shecht. Mi miftar b'hachi min atvila, o dilma b'ay tvila, ule yin akshir, the karban lo kami b'ay, it's okay. So the Gemara says like this. So the shayla is, do you require tvila in such a case? My knife is long, I'm going to be outside of the Azara. The knife is extending inside. Do I have to go to the mikvah or not? Rashi just points out over here that Lamaisa, The Gemara doesn't discuss about the effectiveness of the carbon, because the Gemara already establishes that lemaisa, the carbon has to be lifnei Hashem, but the shochet doesn't have to be lifnei Hashem. So he goes to Gemara Maseches Zvachim that says the carbon itself must be slaughtered within the Beis Hamikdash itself, but the person who's shechting need not be in the Beis Hamikdash. So as I said, the shaila over here is not as much in the effectiveness of the carbon. Because remember, the carbon can be effective. The shaila is, would a person have to go to the mikvah or not? Would such a shochet have to go to the mikvah? So the Gemara says, Tibay le ben zoma, tibay le rabbana. The truth is, this is a kasha both for ben zoma as well as for the rabbana. Excuse me. Tibay le ben zoma, tibay le rabbana, de pligi alei de Rabbi Yehuda. So this was a kasha according to ben zoma. And it's also a kasha on the rabbis who argue on Rabbi Yehuda. Also remember, again, we had Rabbi Yehuda, the rabbis who argue on Rabbi Yehuda, are the rabbis on the Braisos on Lamed Amud Beis, who said that a Metzora has to go to the mikvah again on day 8, even though what? Even though he already was Tovel on day 7. Look at Rashi. Tibay le ben zoma de machmir ba. See, this is a kasha on ben zoma, who was machmir on the Tevila and said that the Tevila is a Doraisa. Tibay le rabbanon de plegi alei de Rabbi Yehuda. Va amru kol adam lo bo'u Tevila. Remember, we'll say, but the rabbis who argued on ben zoma, they only said that a Metzora requires Tevila on day 8. And if you remember again, why was that? Remember the Lashon? The Lashon was Dayish Betumah. Dayish Betumah, because the Metzora is literally immersed in Tumah. But the rabbis would agree with Ben Zoma by other people that Lemaisa, again, they were not required Tevila. So once I said, the fundamental question is, again, the Shochet wants to stand outside of the Kodesh, wants to stand outside of the Azara with a long knife, to shecht his karbon in the Azara. The kashrus of the carbon is not in question, because Rashi points out the Gemara Maseches in Zvachim already establishes that as long as the carbon is shechted in the area that's kodesh, that's fine. The shochet himself need not be in that same area. The shaila is here: do you have to do a tevil? Do you have to go to the mikvah prior to performing such a shechita? So the Gemara says the following. Okay, so let's analyze this. Ad kamo mechayev ben zoma el legavoy. So maybe you could say this: when does ben zoma require tevila? That's only when you're standing on the inside, meaning namely in the Azara. But if you're standing on the outside, you don't have to go to the mikvah. Odzilma, on the other hand, asile imshuche. It could be that what we could be concerned about according to Ben Zoma, maybe what's going to happen, you're going to come to enter the Azara unknowingly. Because I'm also going to remember, you are shechting an animal, and it's quite possible, maybe even probable, that you may just overstep your outside boundaries and enter in next to the carbon. And therefore, again, maybe even according to Ben Zoma, you should have to go ahead and do a tevila just to be on the safe side. Tiboy the Rabbanon. You can also ask Kashkon to the Rabbanon. The Pligi Ale de Rabbi Yehuda. You can also ask the rabbis, like Rabbi Yehuda, Ad Kan Lokam Rabbanon Hassam de Lokav Rabboda. Why did the rabbis hold, kind of like Rabbi Yehuda, That in general, when you enter into the Azara, you don't have to go to the mikvah because you're not doing an avoda, because you're just simply entering. Aval hacha de ka'avid avoda lo. But excuse me, hacha de ka'avid avoda lo. But over here, where the ma'is again, a person is doing the avoda, i.e. shchita. So maybe we will not let you enter in or not let you engage in this process without tevila. So the Gemara says, odil maloshna. Or maybe it doesn't make a difference. The Gemara answers, teku. So the Gemara leaves it as a standing question about this particular case. So therefore, the teku case would be Rav Osai. In a case where I'm shechting with a long knife, I'm standing outside of the Azara. My carbon is in the Azara. Do I have to go to the mikvah or not? Teku. So I'll say again, in general, the way we resolve tekus is l'chumra. We usually resolve tekus again by taking a more stringent stance. Therefore, in this particular case, you would require him to go to the mikvah. Says the Gemara, Chamish tevilos va'asari kiddushin tovos. Remember again, the Mishnah said that over the course of Yom Kippur, the Kohen immerses, goes to the mikvah 5 times, and does kiddush le'raglayim, which means sanctification of hands and feet, 10 times. So the Gemara says the following, Tanur Rabbanan, Chamish tevilos va'asari kiddushin tovel Kohen gadol, u'mekadish bo bayom. So the Braisa says that the Kohen immerses in the mikvah 5 times and does 10 sanctifications of his hands and feet. Umekadish bo bayom on that day, the kulan bakodesh bebeis haparva. And they are all done, meaning all of this is done in the Kodesh, in the sanctified area of the Beis HaMikdash, in the Parva chamber. So also we've spoken about the Parva chamber a number of times already. Parva chamber is one of the residences of the Kohen Gadol in the Yazara, and also it has a mikvah on the top floor. Chutz Merishona. This is all true with the exception of what? With the exception of the first immersion, Shahai Sebachol, which was done in the unconsecrated part of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, excuse me, Shai Sabachal, Al Gabi, that was done again, that was done in the unconsecrated part of the Beis HaMikdash by the water gate. So let's remember, Shar HaMayim is one of the entrances into the Beis HaMikdash. So okay, there was a mikvah right there as well. Ubitsad Lishkaso Haisa. And this mikvah by Shar HaMayim was right next to one of the Kohen Gadol's residences. We already established Kohen Gadol had two residences within the Beis HaMikdash compound. Amar Abayi. So also says this. Abayi says Shmamina. So I'll say this. By the way, is one of the things everybody's actually agreeing about. We'll see. There's machlokes about many of these details, but the first immersion of the day did not have to be done in the Kodesh. Remember, we've already established this yesterday. Why is that? Because the only immersions that have to be done in the Kodesh are what type of immersions? Yom Kippur immersions. Only Yom Kippur immersions and sanctifications that are done as part of the avodah of the day have to be done in the Kodesh. Things that are just part of a typical day in the Beis HaMikdash need not be done in the Kodesh. So therefore, for example, the first daily immersion was something you had to do every single day. Because of that, it did not have to occur in the Kodesh. It didn't have to occur in the Kodesh. Okay. So the Gemara says that based on this, actually very interesting. Amar Abaye, Shmamina Ein Eitam Gavoa Mekarka Azora Shloshim Eshim Ushlosha Amos. So also listen to this. So learn from here. That ain't etam, that the etam signal. Also, you understand, Yerushalayim doesn't really have many water sources. Now, there are actually a number of underground springs in Yerushalayim, like the Shiloach and others, but you don't have any real water sources there. So what's interesting is that the water source for the mikvaos of the Beis HaMikdash came from a place called Ein Etam, the Etam spring. The Ein Etam spring was a good distance from Yerushalayim itself. So the Gemara is very interesting. Very interesting, the Gemara says that the Ein Etam must have been at a height of, at an elevation of 23 amos. Now, how do we know that Ein Etam must have been at an elevation of 23 amos? Well, so here's what we know. In order to go ahead and, let's say, build an aqueduct from a natural spring to another place, the water has to flow downward. Right? Obviously, if the water doesn't flow downward, so you're not moving your water anywhere. So what the Gemara is saying is, we're going to calculate just the height of the Beis HaMikdash in just a moment. The fact that, so in order to get the water from Ein Etam to the gates of Yerushalayim, remember, we're going to say, here's the chap. The chap is you have mikvos that are on top of the walls or at the height of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash itself. See, if the mikvos themselves were on ground level, it would be much easier. But the mikvos themselves were at an elevation. So look what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, you see from here, that Ein Etam was at least 23 amos higher than the karka of the Azara, than the ground level of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. I will say that's very high, because remember, again, we've already established the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash is, remember, already at an elevation, because Har HaBayis is already in elevation.
Yeah.
Right? So it's 23 amos above the elevation of Har HaBayis. So the Gemara says, this now, listen to this. How do we figure this out? This now. All of the walls, or all the entrance ways of the Beis HaMikdash, were 20 amos high. The rach ban esr amos and 10 amos wide. Chutz mishal ulam, with the exception of the ulam. We'll say, remember again, the ulam was much taller than it. 20 amos, right? 20, 40 was much higher than the other entrance ways. Okay, but don't worry about the ulam right now. Right now, we're focusing on the regular entrance ways. Were 20 amos high, 10 amos wide. The Tanya, and we learned, Berachatz bisara b'mayim, the mei mikvah. The Rebbe said, when the Torah tells us that the Kohen has to wash his flesh in water, we understand that to mean not just any water, but rather what? But rather mei mikvah. This is actually not specifically talking about a Kohen, it's about general tumah. But we learn from that for general tumah, a person has to immerse not just in any water, but mei mikvah, kol bisara. Now again, you have to immerse all of your flesh. Mayim shakol gofu ulabahem, that a mikvah has to contain enough water to be able to immerse your entire body. The kamahein, and how much is this? Amma al amma berum gimel amos. It's one amma by one amma with a height of three amos. Vishiro chachamim me mikva arba'im sa'a. And the rabbis established that a mikvah should hold 40 sa'a. The rabbis say the truth is the amount of water that goes into one amma by one amma by three amos is probably less than this. But Chazal went ahead and said that to be safe, the minimum shear for a mikvah is 40 sa'a. Just to understand the contemporary application of that, today it's about 200 gallons. About 200 gallons. And a mikvah has to be at a minimum of 200 gallons. So, okay, so the measurements of the mikvah don't matter for us right now. What matters is like this. The ha on the base. So I'll say, so now, look what the Gemara says. So now, understand this. What have we established? The entranceways of the Beis HaMikdash, the doorways are what? How high? 20 amos high. Now remember, the mikvah, for example, on top of Shara Mayim, which that was on top of the Shara Mayim, which means that, remember, the minimum height of a mikvah is how much?
Three.
So therefore, again, what's the elevation of the mikvah? 23 amos, right? Because remember, it's sitting on top of the entranceway. So now, in order to go ahead and get water to a mikvah 23 amos, you need a spring that's at least an elevation of 23 amos. So the mikvah at least has to be at least on the same level. Excuse me, not the mikvah. The spring has to be at least. We're trying to figure out how tall the spring, how high the spring had to be to get the water, to get the mikvah. Sorry. To figure out, I know, but you can't rely on rainwater. Rainwater is fine as a backup, but you don't know what you're going to collect. So therefore, again, the Gemara is saying, best you got. So now, you gotta shut that down before that even happens. So the Gemara says, so I'll say again one more time. We're talking about specifically, remember, there were mikvaos on the ground level, which are much easier, but the mikvaos at elevation, which there are two of them, we'll discuss the other, are much more difficult to contend with. So now you have this mikvah on top of Shar Mayim. Shar Mayim itself is 20 amos high. Minimum height of a mikvah is 3 amos, which means the mikvah itself is at an elevation of 23 amos, which means that lemaisa, again, in order for the water to come into it, the spring itself has to be at an elevation of 23 amos as well. To which the Gemara says, well, one second. The Gemara says, what about the fact, v'ha'ika ama tikra v'ama ma'aziva? But Rabosai, you see, here's what's interesting. The assumption is that the mikvah is not going to just simply sit right on top of the gate. There has to be tikra, means like a ceiling, right? Meaning the assumption is there's going to be some layer of building material from the top of the gate to the bottom of the mikvah. Not only that, but there has to be a ma'aziva. Ma'aziva, Rabosai, means a floor under the mikvah. The one thing you have to be concerned if you have a mikvah sitting on top of a doorway is what? Is leakage. So what happens? You need to put some type of floor that has some type of sealant underneath the mikvah in order to prevent seepage. So look what Rashi says over here. V'ha'ika ama ove tikra al chalal hashar. So remember, there's the thickness of what he calls the ceiling on top of the gate. V'ama ma'aziva sheltit. They would often make it of mortar, of cement. V'chol meguval yachad. So they would take this cement and sand mixed together. Lihios hamayim nochim sham. Levat omeka chalos shalosh amos shechashat. So Rabosai, the Gemara says, no. The mikvah is not 23 amos off the ground. The mikvah is actually higher. Why? Because 23, what are you doing with 23? You're taking the height of the wall and assuming the mikvah just sits right on top of that. But that's not how it's going to work. You're going to have a little bit of what he calls a ceiling, right, in between the top of the gate and the start of the mikvah, plus an additional, it could be a thin layer, but a layer nevertheless of some type of sealant layer between the mikvah and the ceiling of the shar, which is going to put it more than 23 amos, to which the Gemara says, "Sha'arim de Beis HaMikdash, kevan deshishaninu, b'mashu'u avdilu." To which the Gemara says, no, you don't understand. The gateways of the Beis HaMikdash are made of marble. So we'll say the amazing part about marble is not porous. Because marble is not porous, lemaisa, again, you did not have to put a ceiling or a layer of sealant on top of the gate or underneath the mikvah. So in fact, again, the mikvah did really sit right on top of I should say it differently. So therefore, again, because it was marble, and therefore all they really needed to do was put a little bit of a layer, probably of this sealant type of material, in between the mikvah and the marble gateway. So the Gemara says, okay, but you're admitting to me still that what? there is still some additional layer of space in between the mikvah and the top of the gate. And therefore, what Rabbah is saying, it's not 23 amos, it's more. To which the Gemara says, no. Kevan delo havi amsa lo chashiva. Since the measurement of the area, of the layer of, we'll call it sealant area, between the bottom of the mikvah and the top of the gate was less than an amma, the Gemara doesn't even take it into account. Less than an amma doesn't even really show up in our measurements. Therefore, the Maisa, we say that from the ground level to the top of the mikvah was 23 amos, and therefore the Gemara says, therefore, Ein Eitam, the Eitam spring which fed these mikvahs, must have also been at a minimum height of 23 amos. So the Gemara says the following, Parsu Sadin Shabbutz. So if you remember again, the Mishnah said that when the Kohen went in to do the Tevilah, so they held up in front of him, in front of the entrance of the mikvah. And I just want to say, so you understand, I know everybody understands this, but remember, we're talking over here, I'll show you this because it's interesting. We're talking over here at the Shar HaMayim, right? So we're entering in the water gate. And remember, this over here is the first Tevilah. This over here is the first Tevilah. So it's very small, so I haven't been able to see it. So this is the Shar HaMayim over here. This is the enter over here. The mikvah is up here. Remember, over here is Beis Avatinas, which is ultimately where they would go and take care of the Ketores, and this was one of the residences of the Kohen Gadol. So now when it says that they held up, a sheet, this is actually a good one, so they held up a sheet, right? So over here, this is the entranceway to the mikvah on top, and again, that gold door on the bottom, that is the Shar HaMayim. Mm-hmm. So again, they're covering the Shar HaMayim's entranceway. Kohen Gadol is immersing up there. There's no door, obviously, so they're holding up a linen sheet to give him privacy. So says the Gemara, the following, Maishma Shalbutz, what's so special that about a linen sheet? Meaning, who cares what it's made of? We just say they held up a sheet. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. What is the matter that it's of linen? Because this is a reminder that the primary avoda of the day was done with linen clothing. So this was supposed to be a reminder to the Kohen Gadol. So we'll say, look at Rashi just a moment. Shavodas and big day boots. Sheyesh hayom alav avoda shiva big day boots. Lefi she'enu regular sharis plus shmona begadim. Remember that on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol undergoes a dramatic, an extreme Kohanic makeover. That Lamais, again, he's used to always wearing the 8 vestments, but again, Yom Kippur, he wears only the regular linen clothing, at least for part of the day. Therefore, says the Gemara, we have a number of times throughout the preparation of the Kohen Gadol where we remind him that he's only going to wear big day boots, linen clothing, and holding up the linen sheet. So right when he emerges from the mikvah, he's going to see the linen, reminds him that the avodah of today is by linen clothing.
Would there have been a prohibition to just put up poles and put a linen curtain up there instead of having people have to hold up the sheet? Like, why not make it a permanent, private?
I guess also because it wasn't really used. Oresh didn't say that. I take that back. It was used. Why not just put up a mechitza there? I don't know.
Building fund, that's right.
Somebody hold it up. It's true. It was a cover for the Kohanim. I don't know. Right, but Pashas, they must have had people there every day. Also, I don't know. Says the Mishnah, Poshat Yorad V'Tavol, Allah V'Nistapik. So we'll say what happens. So now remember, these Mishnahs are going just through the order of the daily service. So now we have the Kohen Gadol. This is now, we've just seen the first immersion in the mikvah. Right, so now what happens? Poshat he takes off his clothing. Yorad, he goes down. V'tavol, he goes into the mikvah. Allah, he comes out. V'nistapik, and he dries off. Heviu lo big day zahav. They bring him. That is actually interesting. If you look at Rashi, v'nistapik misatef ba'alontus shel beged. They give him a large cloth towel. Lispog mayim sha'al bisaro. V'nistapik v'niskaneach. So they bring him a large towel, and he wraps himself in the towel in order that he could dry off. Okay. Heviu lo big day zahav. They bring him his golden clothing. I mean, when we say big day zahav, Bigdazav means his regular big day kahuna. His regular big day kahuna. The lavash, he gets dressed. The kiddush yadav v'raglav. And he goes ahead and he sanctifies his hands. If you remember, here's what's interesting. We just got finished saying that they hold up the linen sheet because he wears linen clothing. But remember, he wears linen clothing later on. Linen clothing is really worn when he enters into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But for the first part of the service of the day, which is the Tamid, he wears his regular big day Kohen Gadol. So what happens now? He gets dressed up. When we say big days of golden clothing, that means his regular Kohanic Kohen Gadol clothing. So it's really just amazing to see the order of the day. So what happens? Hivilo is a Tamid. They bring him the carbon tam. I will say, remember, we've already established. So what's interesting also about Maseches Yuma, and I guess it's true of all the Maseches, but here, these Mishnayos are really following a thematic progression, right? They're taking us through the Yom Kippur day. So they're all building on each other. Remember, we already saw the Tamid can be shechted by any Kohen. But remember, on Yom Kippur, the novelty of Yom Kippur is what? That the Kohen Gadol is doing everything. So they bring him the carbon Tamid. Kartso. So I'll say kartso means, the Gemara will explain this, but I'll just give you the, I'll give it away to you. Kartso means he begins the incision of the shechita. Remember, this is very important. Shechita, the halacha with shechita is you have to shecht rov shnayim. The animal has two simonim, a kana and a veshet, the windpipe and an esophagus. And the halacha is you just have to cut the majority of both of them. Now the truth is, generally in shechita, we end up cutting through both of them in totality. What the Kohen Gadol does, and we'll see in just a moment, is the Kohen does the bare minimum for a kasher shechita. And then what happens? And umirek echad shechita al yado. And then another Kohen comes along and what? Finishes up the shechita. Why? Kibel asadam. Because also, remember, every part of the avodah has to be done through the Kohen Gadol. Which means that he has to do the shechita, and he has to do the Kabbalah. What's the Kabbalah? The Kabbalah is the receiving of the blood in a Kli Sharis. Now remember, here's the issue. If the Kohen Gadol does the Shechita in a totality, then what's going to happen? He's not going to get a chance to be Mekabal the blood. So on the other hand, you can't just do a ceremonial cut because you can't pause in the middle of Shechita. See, he does what's necessary for the bare minimum of the Shechita, quickly hands over the knife, or probably the other Kohen has his own knife. The other Kohen comes right in, because remember, the incision is also deep enough that the other Kohen could go right in and just finish up. And this is the Kohen Gadol is Mekabal the blood immediately. So what happens? So look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says umirik acher. He says v'gamar koin acher shchita l'fishen kabbalah sam ksheir ela b'koin gadol. Another koin has to come along and finish up the shchita because the koin gadol has to do the kabbalah sadam v'tzarech lemaher ulekabel. And everybody has to work very quickly. So he goes on. So what happens? V'zarko. He then takes the blood. He then takes the blood that he receives in the klisharis and he does the proper sprinkling of the blood on the mizbeach. Nichnas lahaktir kitores shal shachar. Now remember, all of this is happening outside. Because remember, the mizbeach achitz on the outer mizbeach, which was the one that was used for animal sacrifice, is outside of the kodesh. So then what happens? When he finishes this, he walks inside, enters into the ulam, enters into the kodesh. Lahaktir kitores shal shachar. To go and offer up the morning kitores. Ulahitives haneros. And to go ahead, literally prepare the menorah. Now also, remember, we already know what this means as well. Hitives haneros means to clean out the ash. Right, because the first thing you have to do before you prepare the wicks and the oils, you have to clean out the ash from last night. Ula hakrid es harosh ve es saivarim. And then what? And then he goes ahead and goes back outside to offer up the head and the limbs of the carbon tamid. Vachavitin. The chavitin, remember also, we've already seen, is the special carbon mincha of the Kohen Gadol. That again, remember, oh, interesting, it doesn't normally have to be offered by the Kohen Gadol, but on Yom Kippur it is. Ve es hayayin. And also the wine libations. Ketores shal shachar. So now the Gemara says ketores shal shachar. Hay sekreva bein dam leivarim. Furthermore, again, the ketores of the morning was offered up between the blood applications and the burning of the limbs. Shal bein ha'arbayim bein eivarim lenesachim. And the afternoon ketores was offered up in between the offering of the limbs and the libations. Im hayu kohen gadol zakino istinis. I will say, what happens if the kohen gadol was old or was istinis? You know, means like I think it's normally fastidious or delicate. Well, you have to understand something. There are no hidden mikvos. No hidden mikvos. So it says it's cold. Remember, especially depending on when Yom Kippur falls out, it can be entries even in Yom Kippur, it doesn't fall out. An unheated mikvah, even during the summer, is cold. Especially, again, remember, it's coming from a natural spring. I guess it could get heated on its way there through the aqueducts. But Lamaisa, again, it's cold. Say if the Kohen Gadol, if it was too cold for him, what would they do? Mechamin lo chamin. they would heat up water for him on Erev Yom Kippur. Rashi says, Mecham Elocham be'erev Yom Kippurim, umatilin b'Yom Kippurim l'soch hakak bein binyan beis tvilasa. So I'll say, what would happen? So if he was a zakin, if he was old, or he was just delicate, and he couldn't take the cold water, Mecham Elocham, they would heat up water from an Erev Yom Kippur, umatilin l'soch hatsonin kadesha tafik tzinasan. So all the Gemara says over here is that, again, if he could not handle the coldness of the mikvah, they would heat up water on Erev Yom Kippur and introduce that water into the mikvah on Yom Kippur itself in order to take away some of the chill. Well, so I just say something interesting. Tafik Tzinasan, we're translating as remove the chill. But look, it's amazing how these things work out. Look at Rashi. Shetafig lahamir miyad tzinaso b'miktas. To remove some of the chill immediately. Kimo vayafag libo. Rashi, where does this come from? This past week's parsha. What does the Torah say? The Torah says that when they came to go ahead and tell Yaakov Avinu that Yosef was still alive, so the Torah says vayafag libo kilo he'emin lohem. So there, look at Rashi says vayafag libo mafigin tam. Remember, Rashi HaKadosh comments on this pasuk in the Torah. Vayafag libo kimo nishapech libo milahamin. His heart turned over. Right, his heart was not receptive. It's just amazing how this works out, just timing wise. His heart was not receptive to receiving the message that Yosef was still alive. So again, that's what mafit, tafik. Tafik means to turn over. Okay. Says the Gemara. Amruha rabbana kamei d'Rav Papa. So they said over this concept before Rav Papa. And Rav Papa said, ha delok Rav Meir. That our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rav Meir. Look at Rashi. Ha masnisin delok tinan ba shnei kiddushin betvila rishona. Rabosai again. We're going to see later on, there's a fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan as to how many actual sanctifications of the hands and feet are done, and not only that, but when the sanctifications themselves are done. So our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Meir. Why? The Ikra Rabbi Meir, Kevan de Amar Trei Kidushe Alavisha Avid Lehu, Hachanami La Avid Trei Kidushe Alavisha. We'll say Rabbi Meir's position is that every time there is a dressing or an undressing or a change of clothing, there have to be two acts of sanctification of hands and feet. Look at Rashi for just a moment. The Lo Krav Meir, Rashi says, "De pligi b'mas nisin b'tvila sheniya ad rabbanan, shahayu makdimin kiddush lepshita, v'ho hikdim pshita lekiddush." So obviously we will see that there's a machlokis by the second immersion between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan as to when kiddush raglaim was done. Was it done before undressing or after undressing? This Nan Rabbi Meir, Omer, I'm reading Rashi, Pashat v'kidesh v'sham inon minei disfarile disavarele d'shnei kiddushin shehutzra chakasov bein beged lebeged kiddulach l'kamar. Well, that's interesting enough. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that here's what you have to do. Yet when the kohen changes clothing, there has to be kiddush adayim v'raglayim after you undress, and kiddush adayim v'raglayim before you dress. So in essence, according to Rabbi Meir, you're going to be sanctifying hands and feet twice. Once when taking off the clothing, and once before putting on the clothing. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah, which does not require two sanctifications, apparently does not accord with the view of Rabbi Meir. Amar the Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, no. Bein the Rabbanan, bein the Rabbi Meir. Chad apshita de big de kodesh. The chad alavisha. Rav Papa says, no. Our Mishnah works even according to Rabbi Meir. Why? Because both the rabbis and the Rabbi Meir agree that you need two different sanctifications of hands and feet. They just argue on the timing. But when do they agree? That's talking about when you are removing one set of Big Day Kodesh and wearing another, and putting on another set of Big Day Kodesh. But Hacha, Baha Kamiflegi, and what do they argue about? They say the following. Upashat, Virachatz, Vilavash. So I will say, the Torah gives three different verbs by the Kohen Gadol. He will take off his clothing. He will wash, which means he'll sanctification of hands and feet, right? Belavash, and he'll wear the clothing. Rabbi Meir holds, makish pshita lelevisha, that we equate undressing with dressing. Ma levisha lovesh va'achar kach mekadesh, just as when the Kohen Gadol puts on the clothing, he first clothes himself, and then only afterwards sanctifies his hands and feet. Af pshita, so too when undressing, poshet va'achar kach mekadesh, he takes off his clothing first, and then only afterwards sanctifies his hands and feet. The Rabbanan Sari, the rabbis on the other hand hold, Makish Pshita Lelevisha. They equate undressing with dressing. Malavisha Kishohu Lavush Mekadesh. Just as when he dresses, it's only after he's dressed that he does Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim. af pshita, so to undressing, kishahu labush makadish, so to undressing, only when he is dressed, so to af pshita, so to when undressing, kishahu labush makadish, he only sanctifies his hands and feet when, right before he's about to undress. However, the Gemara says, amru le rabbanan, le rav papa, umi matzis amrisachi, but the rabbi said to rav papa, but how can you say this? Ba'atanya, but we learn, parasu sadin shelbut beinola beina'am, that they held up, what did the Mishnah say? Well, actually, he's going over here to Braisa. They held up a sheet of linen between him and the nation. Poshat, he took off his clothing. Poshat, v'yorad v'taval, he took off his clothing. He went down and he immersed in the mikvah. Allah, he came out. V'nistapek, he dried off. Hivilo big days of, they brought him his gold clothing. The lavash, the kiddish, yada v'raglav. And what happens to Bosa? He put on his clothing, and then he sanctified his hands and feet. Rabbi Meir says, poshat, the kiddish, yada v'raglav, yarad v'tabal, ala v'nistapeg, heviulo bigde kodesh lavash, v'lavash, the kiddish, yada v'raglav. So listen to Bosa. I said, now look what this brisa says. The way this brisa reads is like this. According to the first part of the brisa, what's happening over here is, he took off his clothing, right? He went to the mikvah, he dried off, they brought him his golden clothing, and then what happens? And then he sanctified his hands and feet afterwards. Rabbi Meir says that what? Rabbi Meir says that Lemaisa, no, he went ahead and took off his clothing, then sanctified his hands and feet, then went to the mikvah, which also contradicts what we just said before. Because we just said before that Rabbi Meir would agree that Lemaisa, first you do the kishka of raglaim, which the Gemara says, Amar Luhu, Rapapa says, Itanya Tanya. The truth is, if that's the brisa you have, then I guess you're right and I'm wrong. So we'll say, what's happening over here? So let me just give you the answer vis-a-vis our Gemara. For our purposes over here, what the Gemara is suggesting is, our Mishnah reflects the view of everybody. Why? Because our Mishnah is dealing with a different case. What's a different case? Our Mishnah is talking about a situation where the Kohen is taking off his big day chol. He's not taking off sanctified garments. If he's not taking off his sanctified garments, everyone's agreeing that what? There's no kiddush of raglaim necessary at the beginning. And that's why, again, the order of the Mishnah is he takes off his clothing. The clothing over here is big day chol. He goes to the mikvah. He comes up. He wears his big day zahav. And then he does sanctification of hands and feet. And everyone, even Rabbi Meir, is going to agree in this particular case. Why? Why? Because Lemaisa, again, there's no Big Day Kodesh to Big Day Kodesh. There's Big Day Chol to Big Day Kodesh. That's what Rav Papa wanted to answer originally. What's the problem? The problem is we have an explicit brisa that seems to say differently. We have an explicit brisa that now has Rabbi Meir on record, even for this first one, even for this first immersion, as saying what? As saying that Lemaisa, he takes off his big dechol and then does in fact do kiddush adayim v'raglayim, which seems to contradict this idea, which would then say that our Mishnah doesn't look like Rabbi Meir. To which Rav Papa says, you know what? Okay, I can't argue with that. If that's what your brisa says, then Lemaisa again, that's what your brisa says. So we'll see what Rav Papa actually does. That I will say. But what's interesting about this is the following: the fundamental machlokes. Remember, this is going to be its own Mishnah. Machlokes Rav Papa, which is Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan, as to the proper order of kiddush adayim v'raglayim. Does kiddush adayim v'raglayim occur prior to undressing? Meaning, everyone agrees that you're going to have a second kiddush adayim v'raglayim with every change of clothing. The shaila is, does it happen before dressing, or before undressing, or after undressing? Does it happen before putting on the new garments, or after putting on the new garments? That's the fundamental machlokes, which we'll deal with later on. But lemaisa, again, the fundamental dispute now is our Mishnah in accordance with Rabbi Meir? Rav Papa wanted to suggest yes, because even Rabbi Meir would agree that if you're not taking off consecrated clothing, but just big day chol, kiddush adayim v'raglayim does not have to occur until you put on big day kodesh. Whereas, but now the Gemara quotes the brisa and seems to contradict that, and seems to say that Rabbi Meir would even require kiddush adayim v'raglayim after taking off of big day chol. So we'll stop over here. And Meir Hashem will continue with this tomorrow.